Moncrief on News Talk.
A century ago, a man named Mike Quill arrived from Ireland to Ellis Island, where he hoped to make a new life for himself in the United States. He did that while also helping to effect profound change in his new home, yet in Ireland. His name isn't that familiar. Lorcan Collins, who runs the 1916 Walking Tour, has been working hard to change us. Lorcan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Delighted to be on to talk about Mike Quill.
Yeah, so he, a Kerry man. So I suppose tell us first about his Republican background before he left to the US.
Yeah, sure. He's from Gortlocra, which is a townland near Kilgarvan, which is the bigger sort of area. He was from a family that had a reasonable bit of land, but they got involved, of course, in the Tan War from 1919 to 21. He would have been quite young because he was born in 1905. So he kind of acted as a bit of a messenger boy, keeping a lookout. But when the Civil War came in 1922, he was just about to turn 18 years of age, and he became a very active anti-treaty volunteer. Now, Kerry suffered greatly during the Civil War, and the Free State troops and Dublin Guard were very active down there. So Mike had a hard life for a year fighting in the Civil War.
Did he rob banks?
He may have been involved in one specific situation where IRA did knock off a bank, but they would be very serious. There wouldn't be money for yourself for drink or anything like that. Yeah. They were very dedicated Republicans. And of course, one of the worst events of the Civil War, without depressing your lovely listeners, was when in Ballyseedy, 9 men were tied around a landmine and blown up. 8 of them were killed. And that happened 3 times in Kerry in 1 2-week period. Ballyseedy became a sort of a synonymous with the extreme violence that the Free State perpetrated against the IRA at the time. So very, very understandable that he would leave Ireland later on, because it was very difficult to get jobs. And in fact, it's quite an unexplored area, the number of men and women who stayed with the Republican cause who left Ireland in the 1920s. And of course, Mike is just one of many.
Yeah.
He left on, he arrived in Ellis Island on a lovely date, the 16th of March, 1926.
Just in time for Patrick's Day.
You got it.
And his brother was already there, is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And both of them decided to set up a little business where they would sell holy pictures, you know, the crucifixion and the Last Supper. But they would collect Jews weekly and deliver one photo, a kind of a drawing or a photograph. But unfortunately, the printer reversed the image of Jesus on the cross. And instead of blood gushing from his right side, it was from his left side. Now, these days, who knows which side it was. But people in those days went crazy, and they were nearly martyred themselves as a result of the mistake.
Really? Yeah. So did that put them out of that business?
It did. They were run out of Philadelphia or Pittsburgh as a result of it. So they came to New York again. And they were both very lucky. They did odd jobs, but they were both very lucky to get work on the Interborough Rail Transit, the IRT. Mm. And so many IRA volunteers were working there that they used to call it the Irish Republican Transit. And Irish people were very welcome there because they spoke English and they were hard workers. And they were used to spending 14 hours down in the hole, as they call it, down the hole. But Mike was very lucky because he got a job in a change booth, and he read voraciously while he was down there. And porters used to pick up a book that someone left behind and they drop it up to Mike and he'd read. And of course, the most important book that came his way one day was a copy of Socialism Made Easy by the great James Connolly. And that changed the future of his life.
Yeah. And it also made him think about, because I think, as I understand, there were maybe guilds at the time within the IRT, but no centralised union.
Correct. They had a union which had the same address as the business. So it was associated with the company, a company union. It was called the Brotherhood, but it was exclusive as well. They wouldn't let African-Americans join the Brotherhood. So Mike decided with his friends that they should try to create a union based on James Connolly, his ideals, industrial unionism. Now, industrial unionism is better than craft unionism, where everybody's separate and smaller. Say, for instance, the drivers might have a union and the porters might have a union and the ticket sellers as well. But if you all come together under one banner, one big union, then you're much stronger. Mm. So, of course, employers hate industrial unionism, because within 3 years of Mike founding a union in league with the Communist Party of America, they were 30,000 strong in transport, which is amazing.
Yeah, and I suppose and there would have been a lot of Irish Republicans within that as well. That would have been a strain to it. Yeah.
Sure. And one way that employers used to try and stop people forming unions was they would have union thugs. In the IRT, they were called Beakies, named after H.L. Beakey, who was in charge of security. And they'd say, go down there and beat up those 10 guys. They're trying to found a union. But like, if they're all IRA men, and I say to you, go down there and sort them lads out, you're going to say, here, I quit, right?
Yeah. I'll take the day off today from that one. Yeah, and now, obviously then, the union became enormously powerful. He became enormously powerful as the head of that union. But it was that time in American history where un-American activities and all that kind of stuff. Oh. So he did come to the attention of that particular committee.
Sure, there was a specific committee, which is like the precursor for the McCarthyite period, run by a senator from Texas called Dyes, D-I-E-S, a terrible name by all accounts. But Dyes was after Hollywood, and he tried to go after little Shirley Temple as well. And there was a lot of comments in the media about how they were going to go into Shirley Temple's nursery and seize all her dolls as evidence. But Mike appeared in front of Dyes and he really got stuck into him. And he said, Dyes accused him of being into communism, which wasn't entirely untrue. He was associated with the Communist Party. But he said, if Dyes is interested in routing isms, he should go back to Texas, where they're suffering from virtual nudism because they don't have enough money to feed and clothe themselves. So Mike was very funny. He's very quick and very witty as well. I mean, he's a Kerry man.
Yeah.
And they're very funny people. And of course, his accent was incredible as well. So when he was on TV later on, he used to really play it up fantastically. And he was so popular as well. But also unpopular with certain sectors, but with the workers, extremely popular. And of course, he was also great on racial integration.
Yeah.
In the 1930s, when he founded the union in 1934, he brought three African-American workers on as officers on the board. And this is a time when dances were segregated and when workers, if they had a canteen, it was usually segregated as well. So it's no surprise that Paul Robeson, the great communist singer, spoke at one of the union conventions. And of course, Mike was lauded by one of America's great leaders, Dr. Martin Luther King, who really admired Mike greatly and called him a great friend to the movement.
So after World War II then, and the start of the Cold War, did the relationship change between the Union and Mike and the Communist Party?
Yes, there was a bit of a breakdown. It was coming anyway. Mike, you could see, was getting a bit tired of the communists. And it all centred around this thing called the 5-cent fare. They wanted to double the fare to 10 cent because 70-odd percent of the whole income for the New York subway system was going on wages. And the mayor and the city council were saying to Mike, look, if we can double the fare, we can give you guys an increase. But the Communist Party were against an increase. And they turned on Mike massively. They said, instead of Mike the Red, he's now Mike the Dime. But Mike got his wishes and the fare was doubled. And the men and women working for the system got an extra 20%. So, of course, he had the support of his workers, his fellow union members. And when it came to the 1948 convention, they routed, they purged the communists from the whole organisation.
Yeah, he did a bit of a trick there, but he changed the day when the elections took place.
Yeah, traditionally the union, which he founded, which I forgot to say was the Transport Workers Union, named after James Connolly and Jim Larkin's union, the Irish Transport and General Workers Union. But traditionally they would have lots of business, and then on the last day of the convention they would elect the officers and the president and the executive. So Mike pulled a masterstroke. He quickly announced that they were going to elect the executive as a first event. Mm. And of course, the communists were somewhat taken by surprise, but his supporters were all up for it. And one by one, they purged them from the organisation. I felt a little bit sorry for them, to be honest with you, because they had given so much of their own money and time to it. But it was post-World War II, the beginning of the Cold War. So it was probably a really smart move on Mike Quill's part.
Now, would it be every year that there'd be a new negotiation with the management?
Usually every 2 years, coming up to New Year's Eve. Sometimes you might sort it out in November or December, but oftentimes Mike and his wife Shirley had to be in a hotel where they were negotiating to the last hour, to the 11th hour, and then they'd have a deal and there'd be no strike. But Mike always threatened a strike. That was his style. He'd say, if we don't sign a deal soon, on New Year's Day, such and such a year, there's going to be a big strike in New York. And people always called it bluster. But of course, 1966 was a different year.
Yeah, and why was it different that year? It seemed to be because of the mayor and the governor.
There was a new mayor called Lindsay, John Lindsay, and Mike did not like him. He said he was all silk stocking and Yale. And, you know, when Lindsay was born, Mike was fighting for Ireland. Do you get me?
Yeah.
So they clashed massively. And Lindsay kept saying, oh, we'll negotiate soon. He kept putting it off. And Mike said to him a number of times, listen, you got to come to these meetings. We got to sort this out. But Governor Nelson Rockefeller, the New York governor, had a stash of $100 million, and he didn't tell the mayor about this because he wanted to kind of sort of destroy the mayor, because both men were sort of planning at some stage to run for president of the United States. So Rockefeller, although he was in the same party as the mayor, he wanted to undermine him, and he encouraged the mayor. He said, "Now look, call Mike's bluff, call him out, and I'll back you up, okay?"
Yeah.
And of course, on the 1st of January 1966, Mike called an all-out strike for transport. Now, it didn't matter too much on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
But a couple of days later, when everybody returned to work, they're walking into New York City over the bridges from Brooklyn, and they were cursing Mike and cursing the mayor, or both of them in some situations.
Yeah, so that would have brought New York to a standstill, virtually.
Absolute standstill. And the union has a phrase today, the Transport Workers Union under John Samuelson. They say, we move New York. And they really do, because New York came to a complete standstill, and it showed how important it was to keep buses and subways running all the time. And the strike went on and on. But poor Mike was arrested as well.
On what grounds?
Well, there was a judge called Abraham Geller, and the judge said that Mike and his comrades better appear before him and explain why they should continue the strike. And Mike made some comment. He said, the judge can drop dead in his black robes for all I care. The strike will go on. And he defied a court order. And the sheriff and a load of policemen came down and arrested him. Mike was very funny, because when the sheriff came in, the media were all around in the hotel. I think it was the Americana Hotel. And the sheriff came in and he said, Mike Quill, and Mike says, can I see your credentials, right? Like he's a gas man like that, winded him up. But he was brought to a prison, the Alimony Jail, and the poor devil, now he's only 60 years of age, he had a heart attack. And his wife Shirley was trying to give him his medicine, and they allowed her give him one pill, and she was taken out of the jail. And then she heard on the radio, as she was stuck in the traffic, that her husband had a heart attack and was now in the Bellevue Hospital. So he survived that, and the strike was won after 13 days. The lads got 60 million, but it cost New York City 1 billion to for the strike. Crazy money, right? And it just showed, like, sometimes the capitalists will throw all they have against them. But Mike, eventually, he was so sick, he was at home. Sadly, he did die on the 28th of January. And one of the beautiful things is that as an Irish Republican, he had a copy of Robert Emmett's last speech from the dock. And a couple of hours before he died, he sat down with his wife and they both listened to that. You know, the lovely line, until my country has taken her place amongst the nations of the earth, then and only then let my epitaph be written. And Shirley said the tears were streaming down his eyes. And he rang his sister and said, look, it's 1966, it's the Jubilee, I'm going to get well and I'm going to come to Ireland to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Easter Rising. But sadly, he went for a nap and he never woke up.
Oh, my word. But very fondly remembered in the US?
Very fondly. You would never meet a person, especially from the major cities, New York, Boston, Chicago, who did not know the name Mike Quill, especially in the union world.
Yeah, is he commemorated at all in Ireland?
No, but he's very well commemorated in the United States. I've been to a couple of events over there around St. Patrick's Day. You have the James Connolly Irish American Labour Coalition. I marched behind their banner on St. Patrick's Day down Fifth Avenue, as Mike often did himself. And there's a Quill Connolly Day, which is run by various unions, mostly the Transport Workers Union, his union, and very much remembered. I mean, I've been to a number of events that John Samuelson, the president, has spoken at, and I don't think I've ever heard him give a speech without referring and mentioning to their great founder Mike Quill.
Well, I would have thought it's about time that some place in Ireland commemorates him. Kilgarvan, I'm looking at you. That would be one suggestion. Lorcan, that was fascinating. Thank you so much for coming into us. That was Lorcan Collins there, who runs that 1916 walking tour.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.